everyone. Welcome to my show this evening. I am so glad that you have joined us because we are about to kick our vibrations up a notch. We have a wonderful guest with us. Her name is Cynthia Dresler, and she's from www.organicexcellence.com, and she's here to talk about organic living as a lifestyle. And I think that's a very important issue. I know it is for me personally because my guides have been telling me probably for the last several months to go completely organic. So Cynthia is here to tell us why that's important and also about what brought her in to recognizing that organic living as a lifestyle is important. So welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you, Rochelle. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here. Can you tell us about your process, how this all started as an enterprise for you?
Well, you know, sure. It's about 180 degrees away from where I started. I started in the pharmaceutical industry, so it's been a long road.
Interesting.
I know.
Right off the bat.
I know. I'm a self-described pharmaceutical industry dropout.
Mm-hmm.
After college, my first job was in pharmaceutical research for G.D. Searle in Chicago. And after I did that a few years, I went into sales and sales training with Bristol-Myers Squibb selling chemotherapy products. So I was really steeped in the beliefs that traditional believers in allopathic medicine have. And I really believed in it, and I really believed in what I was doing. But, you know, there was a gradual process where things just didn't fit, and things weren't what I thought they were. The first one came when I was in research for G.D. Searle. I was what was called a teratologist, which is teratology is the study of how chemical compounds affect developing fetuses.
Mm.
And it's one of the tests that are required on all drugs that want to be approved by the FDA.
Oh, charming.
Well, right. It was born out of the thalidomide disaster in the 1950s where children were being born with out arms and legs because they found that when they did animal testing, the species that they used didn't react to the drug, but humans did. So it was born out of that. But what happened was, you know, this was when NutraSweet was being evaluated by the FDA and by G.D. Searle. And G.D. Searle got into trouble with the FDA in the mid-70s. And when I was hired in the late 70s, they had completely replaced their research department. And all the testing that was done during that period had to be redone, and so we did it. The interesting thing about it was everybody at Searle at that time in research knew that, you know, it broke down into formaldehyde at high temperatures. NutraSweet did, aspartame. And
wow.
Nobody there ever thought that it would ever be approved. Nobody in research ever thought. No one in the marketing department ever thought it would be approved. Well, when Donald Rumsfeld became president of G.D. Searle back then, within several months, it was approved for use in everything. That was the first chink in the armor for me, knowing that research didn't matter as much as political connections. That was
wow.
That was a huge red flag for me. Then
what a shock.
It was a shock. Because actually, I had planned to work there for a few years and then go back to school and get a PhD in some scientific specialty and spend the rest of my life in research. But that really changed everything for me. And I didn't know, you know, that I had to go to plan B. Well, now what do I do with my life? So I went into sales and marketing and sales training and came back to Arizona, which is where I went to college, and went into pharmaceutical sales, and I sold chemotherapy for 9 years for Bristol-Myers Squibb. And I was trying really hard to keep believing in everything, but then in the mid-80s, there was another thing that happened when, I can't remember which agency it was, if it was the National National Cancer Institute. One of the, it wasn't the American Cancer Society, I'm thinking it was the National Cancer Institute, changed the way that cancer cures were counted. Before that time, when someone had a basal cell skin cancer, which is really a pretty, it technically is a cancer, but it's very benign as far as cancer goes. It would take an awful lot to ever kill anybody. If people just get it surgically removed, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And before that time, they never counted those as cures because everybody that had them was cured. It was rare for it to ever spread anywhere. You would pretty much have to ignore it for maybe 50 or 60 years, and it would have to be above a major organ for it to really do any damage. And at that point, they started adding in the basal cell skin cancers to the cure rates, which really skewed the cure rates. So all of a sudden, the American public thought that we were doing a lot more and doing a lot better job curing cancer than we actually were, because really nothing had changed, excuse me, except the way cure rates were calculated.
So obviously this is about money.
This is about money, power, control, sure.
So I just wanted to stop you for a second and just go back to Rumsfeld, because I just, can you spell it out for me in terms of the dollar signs? What was in it for him if he decided, well, he obviously did. He went ahead and he approved NutraSweet, but what was
he
in?
He didn't do it. The FDA did.
Okay.
But at his, because of his political connections.
Okay. So what was the advantage?
Well, I think, I don't know. I mean, I was low man on the totem pole there. I was right out of college. This was my first job out of college.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, you know, I certainly didn't ever meet the man. But from just what I gather about him from people who did know him, he's very determined to do whatever he has, whatever goal he has set for himself. And I'm not, you know, I don't know, maybe there was, I just don't think with a personality like that it's always about money. I think it's about, I set this goal and I'm going to do it, and just, you know, have a real single-mindedness about it, and you just keep pushing until you get it.
Okay. All right. So what I'm trying to understand.
I don't know, but that's my interpretation.
Yeah, because it just doesn't make any sense to me. Why would somebody decide to put this poison out on the market?
Well, it could be that, you know, people who are in those positions aren't scientists. And if they view this as not that serious, or thinking that, you know, it may be overstated or something, they wouldn't view it in the same way as somebody who worked in research. But what I don't understand is why the FDA did it. Because they are charged with doing that.
Wow, that's an amazing thing to me. Because obviously, if it starts there, then it's generalized, and it's that kind of thinking is just throughout the FDA, and of course they're going to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it with not just this particular product, but it makes me wonder how many products out there are poisonous.
I don't know.
And that's why I believe my guides are telling me to go all organic. So that's why I'm just so interested in what's going on here. Okay, so let's go back to the basal cell cancer. It skewed the cure rate.
The numbers of cure rates. I mean, the same number of people pretty much were dying from cancer as they were before that, but because they put this massive number of cures from basal cell skin cancer into that statistic, it made it look like we were really making progress.
Now, what's the point of that?
Well, I think it would give the whole pharmaceutical industry a boost.
Money. Okay. Very interesting.
You know, and then it would keep people contributing to various, you know, the National Cancer Institute, the American Cancer Society.
But it would keep people contributing to the pharmaceutical companies.
Well, but they don't really directly contribute to the pharmaceutical companies, except for the fact that they would use their drugs and buy them for whatever malady they have.
Hmm.
It would
okay.
keep people looking in that direction
mm-hmm.
instead of looking for alternatives.
Okay. Okay. So continue with your story.
Okay.
So this happened, and
so
then
that
what?
Happened. And then, you know, and that was a real problem for me to overcome. And then, you know, in talking to the oncologists in my territory, many of them told me that more and more cancers were environmentally caused.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I didn't really understand that because I was always told that as a society, we do a lot to clean up the air, the water, and the land. And so what in the environment is doing this? And it was just something that was always nagging at the back of my head, and I never really got an answer. And nobody ever knew what exactly that meant, just that the environment was causing a lot more cancers than it had before. Then in 1990, when my daughter was born, she was very chemically sensitive to things, not in a severe way, not in a life-threatening way, but the products that I was told to use on her from the hospital, from her pediatrician, you know, the baby products and all of these things. And, you know, when you have a baby in the hospital, at least the hospital that I had her in, they gave me a bag of products to use. And she just reacted all the time. She always had a rash all over her. And nobody ever really had a solution for it. And this went on and on for, you know, I tried all kinds of different products. Nothing seemed to make a difference. And then when she was two, she went to her cousin's birthday party, and they had a clown that was doing face painting, you know, little face
mm-hmm.
painting things. And she wanted a flower on her cheek, so I let that happen. And, you know, when we got home and I washed it off, there was this huge red mark exactly in the shape of the flower that just would not go away.
Mm.
And I tried all the things I knew. It didn't work. Took her to the doctor. Her doctor gave me some topical preparations to try that were prescription. Those didn't work. So I took her to a pediatric dermatologist who wanted to put her on steroids. And I said, no, you know, I'm not going to do that. And he said, well, you know, it would clear it up. And I said, well, no thanks. You know, I'll increase her water intake and fresh fruit, and eventually this will get washed out of her system, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I called the clown that did this, and I asked what paint was used. And, you know, they were very open and, you know, had never had this happen before. And I got some of the paint and looked at it, and it's labeled non-toxic, safe for children. You know, there was no reason for them to think that there was anything wrong. And then I looked at the back and started reading all the chemicals and had no idea what any of this stuff was. So that's what this slow process was of educating myself about what these chemicals were that were in all the products that we were using on a daily basis that we just weren't even aware of. And then I started looking for products that didn't contain these harmful chemicals and couldn't find any. And I started my own company, and that's what we do. We use everything's in a chemical-free base. When I say chemical-free, I mean synthetic chemicals, meaning chemicals that don't appear anywhere in nature. These are the bad ones because our bodies can't process those. So we either react to them or, you know, if we're lucky, we eliminate them, or they get stored in all of our body, in fat cells, wherever there's room. And, you know, these are the only products that she can use. She's now 16 and doing very well.
That's an amazing story.
So it was, you know, I didn't, you know, I kind of came into this almost screaming and kicking. I didn't set out for this to happen. This is not the way I expected my life to unfold, but, you know, I wouldn't change it for anything in the world now. But it was a long and drawn-out process. There was no one event that really changed everything for me.
Yeah, it just sounds like a process of awakening.
Mm-hmm.
What are people drawn to in your particular products? Do other people have the same experience as your daughter did?
Yes, more and more. There's a new malady that's been identified by the AMA, by the American Medical Association, called multiple chemical sensitivities. And it's now estimated that over 40 million Americans have what's called multiple chemical sensitivities, or sensitivities to chemicals to a point where it causes them to change their life in some way, whether it's as simple as changing the products they use or as complicated as quitting their job and moving and completely uprooting their life, or even not being able to go outside for a while. This is a growing problem, and more and more people are looking for products without synthetic chemicals. So, yes, that's what they're drawn to, because I say, even though the name of the company is Organic Excellence, it's actually called Organic Excellence Chemical-Free Products. Even though Organic Excellence is really on top, to me, the organic ingredients in the products are pretty much the icing on the cake. The cake is the chemical-free base. That's what you notice. That's the difference. That's what keeps people coming back and telling their friends about this, because you can have a product that's loaded with organic herbs, but if your base is all synthetic chemicals, what good is it?
Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense to me. Now, what do you use as a base for your particular products?
Well, probably the biggest thing, everything starts with organic aloe vera. That's the biggest base for everything. And then it depends. From there, it depends on the product. You know, everything requires something different to keep it suspended and stable.
So why do you suppose this is a growing problem, the chemical sensitivities that people have?
Because we are bombarded with it. There is not a lake or a stream or a body of water on Earth that does not contain synthetic chemicals. To give you an idea of how pervasive this problem is, when scientists are studying ice in the North Pole,
mm-hmm.
and they want pure ice, they now have to dig down or drill down 100 feet to find ice that does not have synthetic chemicals in it.
Wow.
That's a 10-story building, approximately. That's how polluted our world is today. They have now, and now there's a whole new type of pollution. It's called pharmaceutical pollution, because they're finding huge amounts of commonly prescribed pharmaceutical drugs in waterways. For instance, they have found measurable amounts of Prozac in fish in Texas.
Wow.
This
no
is
more
just,
depressed fish. That's amazing.
This is everywhere.
Huh.
I mean, they find pesticides in the breast milk of Eskimos in the North Pole.
Well, that leads me to another question, which is pretty interesting,
mm-hmm.
is how much of this problem with the pharmaceutical pollutions and just the pollutions everywhere,
mm-hmm.
because I imagine it's not just Prozac.
Oh, no.
Is affecting someone's mood.
Yeah.
Is affecting our psychological states.
Right. Well, we don't know, because this kind of study has never been done. And the thing is, it would be almost impossible to do a study like this at this point in time, because where do you even start? You know, there's an estimated 80,000 chemicals on the market in products that we use every day that we're not even aware of. And the thing is, these chemicals have never been tested alone, let alone in combination. So how can you even begin this at this point? This is something that should have started about 70 or 80 years ago.
So there is no requirement to test the chemicals any longer, or has
no? There
never
has been.
Never has been.
Well, I've been doing some research on this to find out how this happened and how we got this tremendous amount of chemicals on the market, just under the radar screens of everyone. Where did this start? And I really believe it started rather innocently back in the, you know, in the early part of the 20th century, back in the 1920s and 1930s. Doctors believed that our skin, human skin, was acted like a barrier to keep out harmful substances from our body. That was common medical thinking back then. Well, now we know that's crazy, and our skin acts more like a sponge than a barrier to let everything in. But back then, that was thinking, and that was about the time the FDA got started. So if they were going along the lines of current medical thinking, they would have believed that this wasn't a problem because our skin would keep us safe. Now, the AMA and any physician you talk to today would say that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So even though medical thinking has progressed, the FDA thinking never changed. I mean, it never did anything to actually look at all of those chemicals and require testing to see what the toxicity to humans was. And now I don't know if there's any stopping it.
So it doesn't sound like the FDA's, and God bless the FDA with a lot of love and light and grace, mm-hmm. isn't very effective and never really has been.
Well, it has been, you know, for instance, identifying, you know, reacting to the thalidomide disaster in the 1950s. They did. They got right on that. They changed the way that pharmaceutical companies had to do testing so that a disaster like that would never happen again. It used to be that the FDA was not intimidated by the pharmaceutical industry, and they would hold them to task. For instance, in the 70s, they came very close to shutting down G.D. Searle because they thought they were doing sloppy science.
Uh-huh.
They did that. It seems to me that everything changed around 1992 when Congress changed the way that the FDA was funded. Because before that point, the FDA's funding came from the budget office, from the congressional budget.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about in 1992, Congress said, well, you know what? Since the FDA spends most of its time regulating the pharmaceutical and the chemical companies, it seems to me they should pay for this. So they required these companies to pay huge sums of money every year to the FDA to support it. So at that point, everything changed. So now you have the people being regulated in financial, you know, having financial responsibility for the regulator. Well, how can it be objective now?
Yeah, there's too many hands in the pocket. So that answers my question at the beginning of the show. Now we know.
Okay, yeah. So that's where it comes from, you know, that Congress needs to change the funding back.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, you know, the pharmaceutical industry does not have financial responsibility to support the FDA.
Wow.
This is how genetically modified foods have gotten on the market without testing and even labeling. You know, when you have the regulated financially responsible for the regulator, you're going to have a real problem. There's not going to be any
problem.
Objectivity anymore.
Yeah, that's a problem. that's a very strong problem. Okay, so it's amazing, and maybe we are, because I'm just thinking this out, because it sounds like from what you're talking about, that there is pharmaceutical pollutions going on and the chemical sensitivities are on the rise.
Oh, yeah.
And I am just wondering how many other related diseases are starting to happen.
I don't know. I don't know if there's anything new that's coming forth. I think, you know, or if you just look at the incidence of almost any disease in this country, it's on the rise. When you consider that right now, the incidence of cancer in America is 1 in 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. And if we go on, it's predicted to be 1 in 1 by 2020.
That's amazing. Do you think that there's any correlation between food and cancer?
Between food and cancer?
Between the
the poisons that are out there, food, products, synthetic chemicals?
My personal belief is yes. And I'll tell you why. Because knowing that the body cannot break down these synthetic chemicals and they have mm-hmm. to be stored, this creates a burden on the immune system. Because you have all of this stuff, whether it's in fat or between tissues or anywhere there's space, eventually that amount of chemicals gets to the point where it starts suppressing the immune system. And then what I believe happens is that, based on a lot of what I've read, is that then your immune system becomes susceptible to whatever your genetic weakness is. If that's cancer, if that's diabetes, if that's Parkinson's disease, if that's multiple sclerosis, whatever it happens to be for you. And I think that's why there's not one type of disease called multiple chemical sensitivities. It's a wide range of things because it depends on your own genetics.
As I'm listening to you, I'm wondering how many countries out there have some kind of regulatory agency. And also, do you get support internationally for your company? Are there people going to
other places?
Right. Are other people, like from France, for example, coming to your website because they're experiencing the same problem?
Well, you know, you don't just have to have multiple chemical sensitivity to use our product. We have a lot of people that use it who do not have multiple chemical sensitivities, which is like the products.
Exactly.
And yes, we do. We sell, you know, not a lot. I wouldn't say we have a lot of sales overseas, but we do have, you know, regular customers in England and Germany and where else? France, Italy, Australia. I'm just thinking the places that I remember those places that we ship to fairly regularly.
So there is a consciousness being raised out there, or people are experiencing problems.
Probably both.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
It is. And kind of tragic.
And kind of what?
Tragic.
It's extremely tragic. So where do you see your business going from here?
Well, what do you mean?
Are you expanding into other products?
In time, yes.
And what do you offer now?
Well, we have chemical-free shampoo, conditioner, a face and body cleanser, alcohol-free hairspray. We have natural progesterone cream. We have joint pain formula cream. We have an environmentally safe cleaning product. I'm forgetting things I know. A silk protein formula, wonderful anti-aging cream. We've got C-Max, which is high-dose vitamin C cream for the skin. Let me think. We sell chlorine filters for the shower, and I think that's about it.
Okay. Do you test your particular products?
Sure. Well, we don't use the chemicals in the first place.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing right
we
there.
Right. That's the thing. Those synthetics aren't in there. Because people just realize, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, there's not a lot of chemicals in each product. I mean, the percentage is low. And that's true. But think about this. Think about let's take one chemical. Let's take sodium lauryl sulfate, which is in any kind of soap or cleaner, you know, cleansing agent. It's in toothpaste. It's in eye drops. It's very irritating to the skin. On a scale of 1 to 10, it's a 10 as far as contact dermatitis, which is skin irritation. So this is in all of these products. Now, you have to ask yourself, how many times a day are you exposed to just this one chemical? You know, how many times do you wash your hands? How many times do you wash your hair? How many times do you brush your teeth? Okay, add all those exposures up for each day. And then how many days a week, how many weeks a month, how many months a year and how many years out of your life. And knowing that these can't be broken down in your body, that's a lot, and that's just one.
Wow.
So it's not, normally chemical sensitivity doesn't come after one or two uses or even 100 uses. It probably starts somewhere after 10,000 exposures. But that's not hard to do when it's in everything that, when these chemicals are in everything that we're exposed to every day of our lives. So, and that I think is part of the disconnect with people and why they don't understand this completely, because there's such a long time between the cause and effect, usually.
Yeah. How do they even narrow it down?
To what?
How do they even narrow down the effect to the cause? Because there is such a long period of time and there is such a great exposure. How can they narrow it down to that one particular chemical or chemical sensitivity?
I don't know that any particular chemical at this point can be traced to any particular disease other than just the whole group and multiple chemical sensitivities, with a few exceptions. There is a lot of research now talking about the connection from pesticides and Parkinson's disease.
Mm.
That seems to be a real correlation. As time goes on, we're getting more people interested in finding out what chemicals cause which different diseases after a certain exposure level. But that's just starting.
What are the symptoms of somebody who has chemical sensitivity? How would you know if you have multiple chemical sensitivities? Does it come through like an allergy, or how does that happen?
It can. For many people, it does. You know, it could be something as simple as, let's say, you use a certain product your entire life, and you've used it for 30 years, and it's always been your favorite, you pick a product, say shampoo.
I don't want to say over the air.
Pardon
me? Come and get me.
No, I'm not saying brand, but, you know, let's just say, you know, your typical mass-marketed shampoo.
Uh-huh.
And then one day you use it, and, you know, you get a rash, or you get a headache, or your stomach is irritated, and you don't quite, you know, you don't quite put it with the product. But it could very well be that it's not that the product's bad. It's the same as it's always been. They always do a quality control. But it could be that your liver has finally had enough and is giving you a wake-up call by giving you some sort of reaction to catch your attention so that you start looking at, you know, the chemical overload in your body and you start doing something to either change the products you use or try to detoxify yourself.
Now,
it's tough, and that's why so many people don't believe it's real.
Right, because I'm thinking, well, there's probably a lot of misdiagnosis out there.
Oh, tremendous. And I'm so glad that the American Medical Association created a new specialty of doctor to treat this. It's called environmental medicine doctors. And these are MDs that are certified through the AMA to treat multiple chemical sensitivities. And this is really important to know, because normally these doctors come from the field of allergy and immunology, and they specifically realize that many allergies today aren't just to dust and pollen and mold. They are to chemical exposures. And so that's how this started. And so now there are a lot of doctors. There's a lot of naturopaths treating this now and homeopaths. So people do have alternatives now. They have people that they can talk to who aren't going to think they're crazy. And this is very important.
It is very important, because I imagine it's going to be so validating
for somebody that's out there that's experiencing these allergic-like symptoms and they don't know why or what's causing it, and they're going from doctor to doctor, and then finally they probably run across somebody who can help them.
Right. And there aren't a lot of environmental medicine doctors out there now, but there is a website, and I'm sorry I don't have the site right here, but if you in your search engine, in your browser, if you put in environmental medicine doctors, the website will be listed, and then you can go on it, and it's got a state-by-state listing of environmental doctors around the country, and this is very helpful, especially with children, because a lot of times chemical sensitivity manifests itself in behavioral problems in children.
Kids
who are absolutely out of control.
Huh.
You know, that are just wild, and nobody can control them. And, you know, the first response is to drug them, put them on Ritalin or, you know,
exactly.
Whatever.
Exactly. I was just going to say that probably shows up as attention deficit disorder.
Right. But if you can get them to an environmental medicine doctor, they can test them for chemical sensitivities. They can desensitize them to it. And their behavior changes instantly. I've seen it.
Wow.
There's Dr. Doris Rapp, that's R-A-P-P. If you look her up in a search engine, she's got a fantastic website and has written many books about this. And she started her medical career as a pediatric allergist. And she has a great video called something like Environmentally Toxic Schools. And she actually films kids who are absolutely out of control. You would describe them as the biggest brat you've ever seen in your life. And then they get the sensitization treatment, and within 30 seconds, they're normal. They're behaving like normal kids. And the thing is, they don't even remember acting that way.
Wow. Amazing. So what would be the treatment?
They do a like a desensitization panel, and they give them kind of the antidote. I don't really know how that works. I'm not a doctor myself, but if anyone wants to look up Dr. Rapp's, Dr. Doris Rapp, MD, her website, I'm sure it's all explained there.
Very interesting. So part of the treatment, I would think, not for this particular case, but for somebody who has chemical sensitivities, is of course your products.
Well, it's one of the solutions.
Right.
You also have to get yourself detoxified, and then you have to not put more chemicals in, which is where my products would come in.
Wow. Huh. So there could be an actual protocol that you would, it sounds like there is an actual protocol that you have to go through in order to get detoxed.
Yes. There is a lot of things. It depends on the level of toxicity. It depends on how it's reacted. I know there's another doctor, Dr. Carolyn Dean, who's an MD and an ND, does consultations too, and I know it's over the phone, where she finds what has become depleted in your system and then adds those nutrients back, and that can help you overcome the toxicity of the chemicals and help you detoxify faster. So there are all kinds of different approaches. It's important to find one that works for you.
Wow. So here you are, a researcher, finding out all this information, and here you are developing your own products. Now, do you see your line of products growing? Because one of the things that I'm just wondering about is, well, how do you keep out of chemicals? I mean, if you're exposed to so many, mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking of a friend of mine just recently was working at a hotel, and they had somebody come in and clean the hotel. Everybody got ill from the products that they were using.
That's not that uncommon.
Exactly.
You know, cleaning products can be among the most toxic around. and people need to be aware of that. And, you know, there are safe alternatives. You have to look for them. I sell one of them, but mine's not a disinfectant. It's just a cleaner degreaser. So you do, you know, if you need a disinfectant, mine won't work. You have to look for other things. But there are things out there you just have to, you know, the most important thing, Rochelle, is what we're doing now is to make people aware. Because if people are aware, they can start looking for things. It's when people don't know that they become trapped in this cycle of, you know, chemicals and illness.
I'm wondering how long the chemicals stay in the body.
Well, the problem is the body is not able to break down synthetic chemicals, so they stay as long as they're there. That's what the problem is.
So it could be a lifetime cycle,
right,
is what you're talking about.
Right, and then it builds up over time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the problem comes. Now, my daughter reacted right away in life. Many people don't react until they're in their 50s.
Mm-hmm. Are there cases where people's reactions are taken care of, but then they cycle back into becoming sick again?
Well, if they don't keep the chemicals out, I imagine that's happened. Like I said, I'm not a doctor myself,
right,
so I don't know all the
right
stories. But yes, because part of the process is first to detoxify yourself of all these chemicals. The second part is don't put the chemicals back, or put as few back as you possibly can.
Wow.
But this is a real, you know, I would encourage your listeners to do to prove this point for themselves. Go into your bathroom, take all the products in there, write down all the chemicals that are in everything, and the ones that have the same chemical in more, you know, in several products. Just make an extra line, you know, stick line next to that so that you know how many products have that particular chemical in it. List all of those, and it's going to be incredible. And then realize you're exposing yourself to these every day, and the ones with the little stick lines next to it, you're exposing that many times every time you use those products.
Hmm.
It's enormous. Over the course of your life, it's enormous. I was reading a paper that said that the average American woman, before she goes to work in the morning, exposes herself to about 150 synthetic chemicals, just from shampoo and conditioner and body cleanser and hairspray and makeup and deodorant and toothpaste and mouthwash and, you know, everything else.
Wow. And there's not necessarily any information available on these chemicals on the web?
You would have to do it on a case-by-case basis. There's nothing all in one place. You know, but we do live in the information age, and the Internet is wonderful. I encourage people to look up what's called the Material Safety Data Sheet for these products.
The Material Safety Data Sheet.
Yes, it's called the MSDS for short. And what this is, and take a chemical name like sodium lauryl sulfate or propylene glycol or quaternium 15, and put in, you know, the name of the chemical and MSDS next to it.
Even the names sound dangerous to me.
Right, well, they are.
They are.
And you'll pull up the material safety data sheet and you read that all these things say, you know, avoid contact with human skin, and you're putting it on yourself, you know, how many times a day throughout, in how many years of your life?
Wow. Huh.
So it's all there.
So right now, other than people like you, thank you very much. I'm so grateful you're here with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I'm glad someone's interested in this because, you know, this is a real uphill kind of project.
Well, I think it's an important issue for many, many different reasons, because I think that the vitality
of the planet really needs to be kicked up a notch in terms of its vibration, and that going organic and taking a look at these issues is part of kicking up the vibration here on this particular dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it is very important, and it is something that needs to be looked at, because we no longer can fuel the toxicity that's happening here on Earth, for Earth and for ourselves. It's one
right.
of the same.
Right.
Because we're really killing ourselves. I mean, that's basically what we're doing. And,
yeah.
you know, why we're doing this, I don't really know. I don't quite get it.
It's habit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's habit through lack of awareness.
Right.
It doesn't have to be this way.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have to be like this for many, many, many different reasons. But here we are.
Right.
And we have to change it.
Right.
And one of the things that I was thinking about when you were talking about the pollution of the ice, I don't know if you saw Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth. Have you seen that yet?
I'm sorry, I haven't.
It's so interesting, because he's talking about global warming, and he doesn't get into the pollution aspect of it. But he does present a lot of concrete evidence from people like yourself who have done the research out there in terms of global warming, and he shows these wonderful pictures of these wonderful icebergs that were so large back in the 80s and now have shrunk to half their size now. I mean, there's direct evidence here that not only with global warming, but as you're presenting here right now on this show, that there are things happening in our environment that we really have to take a look at, folks.
Yes. We do.
Everyone, everywhere, because we all are responsible for changing it. So it is very important to look at, to notice, to say we've got to wake up and take a look at this, because, you know, the other thing is that's coming across my mind is there doesn't seem to be any kind of regulatory agency out there that's really overlooking this or regulating this from happening.
Well, the thing is they don't view this as a problem.
Right.
And part of it is because they're funded by the people they're supposed to be regulated, in part, not 100%.
Right.
But in part, and that mm-hmm. is incredibly problematic.
Very.
You know, and this goes to the FDA and the EPA and the USDA.
Mm-hmm.
This just, this has to change.
I don't know if it's going to change. You know, personally, I see all of what's happening as heading towards sovereignty for ourselves, independently in terms of our politics, independently in terms of who we are in our connection within ourselves, with our own sense of God and Source, and independent research and taking care of and protecting ourselves,
mm-hmm.
which is what I think you're doing, is that you're presenting this information so that we can make sovereign choices about how we're going to act, what
yes.
we're going to do next,
yes.
how we're going to take care of ourselves, because you know, it's becoming clearer and clearer to me that we have to educate ourselves.
Yes, we do. And fortunately, we live in a time when we can do that.
Which is a good thing.
Right.
So we have the technological ability to be able to go out there and research and go to your website, which is
www.organicexcellence.com.
Yes.
And also, I also have a radio show, and many of the shows are on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of my show is Chemical Free Living. So they can listen to that on my website, too.
That's right. And can you share some of the topics that you explore in your show?
We talk about ways to get chemicals out of your life. We talk about solutions. This is an upbeat show. We're not just, you know, trying to give everyone bad news and then leave you hanging. We give you solutions.
That's a good thing.
In every show. And we talk about any way to heal that there is without chemicals. Anything from, you know, avoiding synthetic chemicals in the products that you use,
eating organic, staying away from genetically modified foods, which actually have the pesticide and the herbicide in the seeds. And then we talk about solutions. We have leading environmental medicine doctors on talking about how to detoxify, how to look for, how to judge whether your children have symptoms of multiple chemical sensitivities and what to do and where to go, how to bring issues like this up to your children's schools about get the chemicals out of the classroom and out of the schools and out of the cleaning products that are used and the fertilizer on the grass. It goes on and on. We talked to, we have had a Reiki master on. We've had an Indian shaman on. Any different way to heal. I have had environmental architects on talking about safe building designs, staying away from electromagnetic frequencies, EMFs. And you can stay away from this in the design of a home just by where you place things. The placing of wires is very important there. And if you do it right, you can eliminate all that. We've talked to Barry Fisher, who's got a great company that can take landfills, and he puts a little factory right next to it and takes all the stuff from the landfills and turns it into completely safe, pristine, and pure, new, environmentally safe building supplies at 30% less than others. We talk about everything. I've had just about every type of healer or alternative business on there. Because what I've found is there's a whole group of businesses in this country right below the surface, right below where everyone sees, that are just waiting for their chance.
Chance to be recognized, chance to be noticed.
And that's
coming.
Yeah.
because we're making it necessary for them to come, which is a good thing.
Well, and chance to be used. For instance, Barry Fisher is trying to get some of the contracts to clean up New Orleans and knows how to do it, but can't get a contract because they're just digging landfills and putting more stuff in there. Nothing is being purified. Nothing is being cleansed. He knows how, though. He can do it. There he is. He's waiting.
Well, you know, it is going to happen. We're going to need all the resources that we can get shamanistically, as well as in the more concrete ways, such as you're speaking about with the landfills. And that is going to happen. There's no question about it. But that's a good thing because it's going to be extremely efficient and accelerated into healing for the earth and for ourselves. So thank you very much, everyone, for joining our show for this very, very important event with Cynthia Dressler at www.organicexcellence.com. I highly recommend that you visit her website. And thank you so much for Don and Doug, the producers of this show. I just so appreciate your goodness in allowing us to be with you as your guests. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you, Rochelle.
And you're very welcome. And thank you, everyone out there. Have a very good weekend. Bye-bye now.